Welcome back to Written by You, the Literacy Podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Chomba. And today I'm joined by an incredible storyteller, a passionate journalist, and a capable marketer, Mono Chungu. Mono has truly mastered the art of writing with a purpose. Whether it's on her LinkedIn, where she has a thriving and very engaging audience, or through her journalism that she has a true passion for. In this episode, we dive into the story behind her book, Roots, her publishing journey as she wrote that story and brought it out into the world, and how she uses storytelling to build a strong professional brand. If you've ever wondered how to write in a way that connects, inspires, and builds a community while still maintaining your professionalism, this conversation is definitely for you. Let's get right into it. So, Mono, you are quite the interesting character. In fact, you're quite lovely. I have to say that I enjoyed the dinner date that we shared just recently. I think it got me the chance, or rather it gave me the chance to get to know the very lovable and very natural LinkedIn personality that a lot of people know you from your LinkedIn, right?
I think so. Most people who say they know me, I think it's from LinkedIn.
Yeah, because you seem to be very deliberate about the curation of your LinkedIn. It feels both like very natural, but also at the same time, like someone has taken the time to think about how they want to sound on LinkedIn all at the same time. I don't know how I can explain it, but it's a good thing. It's difficult to emulate. It's unique just to you, and I think it makes you stand out. I think that would be a great place to start the conversation because I know for a fact that many people know you from your LinkedIn. So tell us about that. How do you approach writing on LinkedIn?
So for LinkedIn and with most of the things that I write, it's for me just sharing my story. And right now I'm in a space where most of my life revolves around professionalism. So there's a lot of things that I learn or that I want to be celebrated for or that I just want to showcase on my LinkedIn. So actually, it's funny that you'd say that because my LinkedIn, when I started, my goal was just to have 500 plus followers. And that ended up being a thing of once I reached the 500 plus, I stopped. And then I just started getting more and more. And now I've grown to like so many times more. I've now got almost 13,500 actually. So yeah, basically for me, it's just about sharing my story, sharing the things that I learned, sharing and celebrating other people that I've worked with. And yeah, just really embracing my professional journey at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, now that really comes out. It comes out in a very beautiful, very natural way. It doesn't feel, you know, because LinkedIn can very much be a place of, it can sometimes, for lack of a better term, feel too serious for some people. Most of the people there in suits, we understand that it's a business platform. They're always looking pitch perfect. They're always looking picture perfect with their ties and their suits and they're at some corporate event. But somehow you have managed to balance that aspect of LinkedIn with a more casual approach to it, you know? And I think I really like that. It's very refreshing. The manner in which you tell your stories on LinkedIn is very authentic. And I think most people that follow you can appreciate that. So speaking about how authentic you are, your book, Roots. Briefly, you told me about how, when you told me about it, you said something that I liked. You said you wanted the reader to feel like they were in Zambia, to experience Zambia from a first-person perspective. Can you explain a little about that?
Yeah, I think what I was aiming to do with how I narrated certain things and described certain things was I wanted to tell our story in a way that highlights the beauty of body, but also speaks about advice that I feel was harmful, whether it still exists or not. So at the time I was writing my book, there was a lot of tribalism. I think it's still there, but maybe toned down a little bit more now. So that's basically what I was trying to do with how I describe things. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So where can people get your book now, Roots, if they would want a copy?
So I have most of the copies. So one would just have to contact me on whichever platform works, Instagram and Mutalankani, LinkedIn, Monochungu. And in fact, if you type Monochungu anywhere, I'll pretty much pop out. So there's that. But alternatively, people can get it from Amazon, those that are not in the country. So I have shipped to other cities in Zambia as well, which I think would turn out cheaper than if you got it from Amazon. So, and I'll sign the copy. So, yeah.
There's always that plus. What were some of the unexpected challenges that you faced when writing your book? You know, because I can imagine, because when you're writing a book for the first time in Zambia, there's always this naivety at first. You're very excited about your idea, very passionate about it.
Yeah.
All you're focused on is getting it out. And you think it's going to be that easy. Like you're going to sit in front of your laptop, type it. When you're done typing it, it's going to be distributed and everyone will be happy. But that's not the case, is it? Can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Oh my gosh, the story of publishing my book, it was a 5-year-long journey to finally having it published. Yeah, so what started was my parents had initially said they would pay for the publication, and then they said, you know what, you'd probably like it better if you publish it yourselves. So I did start saving money, and I was in uni. So I saved money, and then when I was done with uni, I think by 2019, I had saved up enough money to finally publish the book. But then I felt like, okay, now I've got the money. But then if I use it all, then I'll start from zero. So I was like, let me just save a little bit more. So in that process, I also realized that my writing had improved. I wrote the book when I was in my second year of university. And my second degree is in English literature. So I had improved. And I also specialized in writing and editing for journalism. So my writing had drastically improved. And I felt like, you know what? I could edit it. So I took a few months to edit it and rework it. And also the way that I was writing things, I genuinely think I would have been arrested, hey? Because I was literally calling out people and press freedom, right? So I reworked it in a way I was more subtle about things I was saying, but clear as well. So once I was done with that, there was an editor that I had engaged from the start, like from the moment my parents said, we'll pay for this book. So even before I had written the book, I had already spoken with this editor. So now I was ready to publish. I got a book cover design and everything. Even that is another story, because initially I drew the cover and then someone said, you know what, this book is too strong to have this cover. And they recommended a graphics designer. So we went with that. So fine, now I've got everything. I've got the book, it's typeset, I've got the cover. I go back to the same publisher that I had engaged initially. And I paid him in full because I trusted him. What does this man do? This man literally takes my money and goes quiet for almost a year.
Oh my goodness.
No, maybe a year is a bit of a stretch. Maybe at least 6 months. And I was like really stressed because I couldn't reach him. I even had to engage another publisher. Basically. So I get another publisher to publish the book. And then he comes back. I even had to engage the police. It was dramatic. But eventually he came back and he gave me the books. And for the inconvenience, the police actually asked him to pay me back. So I was kind of sorted. Yeah. So he gave me the books and he paid me back. I gave him a discount with the paying me back. Yeah. So, yeah, finally published. And then funny thing, you must remember I said it took 5 years for all of this to happen. When I finally launched the book, I was interviewed on so many radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and everyone said, this book is so timely. Imagine. I was just like, what? Okay, God really does work in mysterious ways. Because I was thinking, oh my God, I've been delayed. But the thing is, I was publishing the book, and one of the things I write in the book is how election period in Zambia is when tribalism like is heightened. And I described this on and on. And I published the book exactly a month before the 2021. So I published the book just before that election and everyone was saying, wow, this book is so tiny.
So wow. I just think works out. Yeah, things tend to work out after all, in the end. The story of it being very difficult is certainly not unique. In Zambia, it can be a bit difficult to get published, especially when you're self-publishing, which is 90% of what the authors in Zambia do. But I'm sure your readers are grateful for your efforts and also your writing skills have probably improved, because there's something about writing a book that teaches you so much about where your abilities in writing begin and end. So I'm sure you were able to learn a lot about yourself and where your abilities begin and end during that time. Speaking of, you mentioned earlier that you were doing a degree in editing and writing for journalism.
And also the degree in journalism and media studies.
Okay.
And then I specialize in writing and editing.
Is that all, what you always wanted to do?
Yeah. Yes. I actually started, when I wanted to be a journalist, it came from my principal at the time. I was searching what career can I take? And she proposed I should do journalism, but I also learned public speaking. So when she suggested that, my first outlet is, okay, I want to write. I want to be in a newspaper, because even then my dream job was to work for the Post. So yes, it's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to be a print journalist. But of course, going through that journey, you specialize in your final year. So I can work in radio. I can work on TV. I can do photojournalism. So I am all of these other things, but I'm specialized in writing and editing.
That's really interesting. I think in my first interview for this podcast, Anna mentioned something about how a lot of these, okay, I understand that journalism definitely has its place, but there are a lot of other courses that people just don't know about and don't realize how rewarding they can be outside of STEM, outside of maybe these other well-known courses, that people can actually have a fulfilling career from that. Your career has been fulfilling, right? Can you tell us a little bit about how you've, because you're a marketer, you're a journalist. Can you explain how all of that fits into 24 hours?
Well, so with my career, it had an interesting twist. I always thought I'd be a practicing journalist, and I'm so grateful that I actually started working before uni, because had I not done that, I'd have never had my dream job, which was to work for the Post. So I worked for the Post from the year before I started university for 2 years. And then they shut down. And I was a fan, as I've always loved working. So I started actually working now 11 years ago. I celebrated my 10 years last year. And when I started working, I would go to school and I would also still be doing part-time. If there was any story that I could write from school, I would do that, which was very nice. And also because I was studying journalism, sometimes you get like benefits, like if you get published, you get like extra points and stuff like that. So that was nice. So I started out with that. When the Post was shut down, I saw a lot of adverts from school, from South Africa, about Vodafone Jump. And I was like, I need to work there. I even got another job. Hey, I got a job offer, and I just really wanted to work at Jump. So I said, okay, thank you for the offer, but just give me a few days to get back to you. Went for this Jump interview, got the job on the spot, and I started working for Jump. So I worked with Jump for 2 years, and then Vodafone also started to struggle. And yeah, I left. I was actually approached by a company called Adnab McCann, where I worked. Now I had moved into marketing. So actually at Vodafone, I moved from Jump. Once I graduated, I was promoted into marketing. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been in marketing since then. Yeah, so moved to Adnab McCann, worked there, worked at University of Lusaka for almost 6 years.
Wow.
Over 5.5 years. Yeah, and then now I work for a company called Netlink. So I'm still in marketing, and I would have never expected this switch, honestly. Even when I started marketing, I literally actually texted my lecturer, like, guess what? I'm moving into marketing. And he was like, not you. Like, he was so shocked because everyone knew. She's going to be the journalist. She's going to be the one writing books. But yeah, I'm glad that my life has had this twist. I actually don't know if I could see myself actually practicing traditional media at the moment. It's quite risky. That's been the switch.
You seem to have had a great time, like in terms of the job itself and the interactions with the students at UNILAS. You seemed to, anyway, through the photos and the way you documented. Can you share some of the fondest experiences that you had from that job? I think, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, that's where a lot of people know you from. I actually once saw a tweet. I don't know if it was a tweet where somebody said that whoever is the marketing person for UNILAS is doing a good job. So can you tell us about, can you tell us about some of the fondest memories that you had there and the most rewarding experiences from that job?
Yeah. I actually have always thought of UNILAS as that job. You know, when I was younger, I used to picture myself working as a journalist, working on a radio station, doing this, doing that, working the corporate world. Like, I just pictured myself doing a lot of things. And my job actually last secondly gave me that, you know. So I was able to write articles, interact with students, create videos, find niches that I never thought I would actually pursue, you know. So creating reels was one of the things I think the target market quite liked when I was there. So it was a very fulfilling job, honestly. It was so fun, especially interacting with young people. Like, there was so much to learn, literally, from these to my young people. Like, every day was, like, something new, you know? It was great because I could identify people who I could write articles about. I could identify people who I could create videos with. So I think, for me, the most fulfilling was creating relationships with the student and literally having them, like, it was so sad, honestly, even when I left, because, like, I had to, like, now start sitting down with people, like, I'm leaving and having them be so sad, but, like, for me, it's like I had created such a great bond with them and I still talk to some of them. So that's really nice. And I think the greatest thing of it, quite right, interacting with students, interacting with staff, but also being given endless opportunities to just express myself. There was a lot of creative freedom, which I quite liked. So like if I wanted to do a reel, I'll just be like, okay, I want to go do a reel. And they'll trust you that, okay, go. You're going to do it. It's going to be nice. So that was quite nice. Yeah, I think that was the most satisfying thing about that job.
It sounds amazing, honestly. The best type of jobs are always the type where you don't know what's happening today. Of course, there's a structure and way of doing things, but you're not sure about what's going to happen today, who you're going to interact with.
An adventure.
It's an adventure, exactly. And building relationships is something that I too enjoy, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast. It's actually one of the core things that makes people happy, but we don't realize it. Building genuine relationships with people and having deep conversations with them can really help us learn not only about them, but about ourselves. So that's, honestly, it sounds great. On building relationships, did you ever experience a situation where maybe a few of them asked you to mentor them in different respects, perhaps?
Yeah. I actually, the first person who ever asked me to be their mentor is a girl called Delma. And I remember she wanted to set up a whole cute date. And I was just like, man. So I asked her to come meet me on campus instead. And I turned her down. Oh my God, I feel so bad. I turned her down because I just didn't understand why someone would want me to be their mentor. I literally was just like, girl, no. Like in my mind, I'm like, there's so many
people. Some imposter syndrome there. You felt like, okay, I'm not
really, honestly. And the only time my mind changed was when I joined When Female Lead, because then I understood how important it is to have someone mentor you. And for me, my mentor from the onset, her name is Sandra. She was very intentional about telling me, like, I'm going to learn from you. You're going to learn from me. Don't think that I know it all. I don't. And it was so great because, like, everything was so authentic. Like, it wasn't structured. Like, so tell me about this Christmas proposal. It was just, like, we're doing life together. And she's, like, a big sister who I can learn from, you know, and ask opinions on. I learned, honestly, the number of things I learned from her. Like, she would literally tell me, like, you can't do this with work. You need to ensure that you do this and this and this. And it really helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that, how much I gained from her, not just her, like literally everybody else on the When Female Lead program, from the staff to the people in my cohort, I realized that, you know what, I can't have gone through 10 years of professionalism and not be able to advise people and learn from them. So yeah, now I was lucky because for 2 months, my last 2 months at Unilas, I had an intern. And in fact, I met her when I was lecturing, and then we were invited to have interns. So I got an intern, and best experience. Even now, she's someone I talk to, literally. So we don't say we're mentees. I just say she's my baby sister. But it's so nice to impart knowledge to her and also learn from her. Like, there's so many times she'd be like, Mondo, you can do better with that thing. And it's so great. So, yeah.
I like the fact that you
have a few others as well.
I like the fact that you're willing to still be a student, despite the fact that, like you said, you've worked for 10 years, but you can take on an intern who is comfortable enough to advise you as well. That actually tells me a lot about your leadership qualities. If she's comfortable enough to open up to also give you advice, it's because you've created that environment. And I think that's probably one of the things that you probably learned from When Females Lead. Can you actually, if you can, explain how would a young woman end up being part of the next cohort of When Females Lead? How do they get in and all that?
Yeah. So they constantly advertise. I think they take in, they have, I think, 4 or 3 crores. So basically, once they apply, I mean, once they put out the thing that they're accepting application, one needs to just apply and hope for the best. I actually used to see when females lead, but never thought I'll join. And I'm so grateful to my colleague at the time, Kapsama, who's literally a founder sister. And she literally was like, "We're applying. We're applying. I'm applying." Cool. The day we're called for interview, did you get yours? How was it? Okay. And we literally went through the cohort together. So I definitely advise someone to go through it because it's really good with leadership. And that's something that for me at the time I was actually aspiring for. Like, I want to be a leader. I think I've seen it well in my professional life, and I think it's time for growth. So that was so good. There's so much that I learned from it. I would definitely recommend people taking it on.
Okay, that sounds great. I think, like you said, it's something that you constantly see, but then you don't realize that being a part of would actually benefit you greatly. So I'm glad that you feel like that added to you, and then you were subsequently able to add to somebody else because of that program. Hopefully, everyone listening in is going to be checking their Facebook pages and checking for the next cohort. So now we've spoken a lot about leadership, about writing and all that. And you mentioned something where you said you enjoy working. So I have a question. Do you think you would ever work for yourself? Like,
No,
why?
quite frankly, you know, I think it's great that there are entrepreneurs and people who can create opportunities for other people, but I really don't think I have it in me. Like, I always say, if I could do something that was entrepreneurial, it's just my book. If I could start a company, it would most likely be journalistic, and I would probably shy away from that because in Zambia, according to the law, if you are the editor-in-chief of a company and you are sued, you are also going to jail. So I'm not sure if I'm ready to risk my life and go behind bars. Yeah, it takes a strong person, and I just don't have it in me. The reason I even settled for feature story writing is because the chances of you getting arrested are very low compared to news stories, like hard news. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. But if I, you know what, I surprise myself because there's a lot of things I think I can't do and then I can do, you know? So maybe, let me
As
think.
always, as always.
At the moment, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. To be honest, I didn't expect that. You seem like you're a go-getter. You seem like someone who's very focused and driven. You seem like the type of person who wakes up in the morning and has a checklist of everything that they're going to do today, and then they tick and they tick. Is that the case? No?
Sometimes, yeah, I like to know what's gonna happen. Like, if I have a plan, I need to make sure that it happens in that way. I'll actually probably get disoriented if it doesn't go according to plan. But of course, I'm a bit spontaneous as well. But hey, as for that one, I think I don't see my ability. Maybe that's my challenge for the year. I don't see my ability as much as other people.
Well, I
So maybe I'll
do.
challenge myself.
Well, I do, and I think you would make a great boss. So you should think about it. Put it in your New Year's resolution for 2028. We'll
Yeah,
give you a few
that
years.
sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
That sounds like a plan.
So, is there a next book coming up, or are we just going to be left with Roots and that's it?
No, there is a next book which has been on hold. I actually didn't touch it the whole of last year, but it's in the works. I have the whole, like, I have the whole storyline, and it's not an autobiography this time, so it's fiction. So I have the story outlined, and I've actually already been working with the same graphics designer I wrote with last time for a cover. So hopefully soon. I don't know when because I've also started a new role and I'm trying to learn. It's a new industry, so my time is a bit limited, but definitely there will be nights when I'll stay up and write as I did with Shoot. So yeah, something's gonna be cooking.
Okay, that's exciting. That's exciting. And you intend to self-publish this one as well?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, there's always this debate that people have whether they should self-publish or go through a whole traditional publishing process. But traditional publishing can seem very intimidating for some people. But you've been writing for a while, actually, writing material that people can read. Like you have a WordPress blog, right? Can you tell us a little bit about what that blog is about and what's the main focus of it?
So the blog is called That Zambian Way, actually Zambian Way, That Zambian Girl. And I started it in my final year of university. As I said, I specialized in writing and editing, so we had to have a blog. And again, that is another thing that I thought, me, a blog. Look at me, still blogging after uni.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my blog, even the name itself was, I studied in South Africa, and there's quite a bit of xenophobia there. So I would always tell people about Zambia still, like, oh my God, in my country, there's none of this. In my country, this and that. So I thought, why not share my experiences as a foreigner and just give people insight into what it's like to be Zambian and also take people through the experience of what I was experiencing in university. So yeah, basically some of the blogs I started out with was, in fact, my first blog was called Dili Kwere Kwere, which is Xhosa for I am a foreigner, but Kwere Kwere is a very derogatory word. But I said, you know what, you call me it anyway, I'm going to use it nonetheless. And that was like my tag as well. Yeah. So I started writing all these articles about Zambia, like, or trip to Zambia. Like, when I take a vacation, I'll do like an article and I'll also do vlogs. We didn't have to, but I am extra. So I did videos for each of the blogs as well. So when I moved back here, I still felt like I have stories to tell. So writing about the 5-year journey of my publishing, writing about how I lost my dad and, you know, how I'm carrying on and how I learned about my the things like that. Just still being able to share my story on a platform that is mine. So that's basically what my blog is about. It's very autobiographical, but I do also share stories about like other Zambia and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Okay, and it's again another way to connect with people. There's a real vulnerability to that. There's a real vulnerability to that that most people shy away from, right? Because for you to have a blog, you have to be willing to share like a good portion of your life. And even though there may be nothing that you're hiding per se, but again, you're not so sure if you want to share it either. And I think that's what most people feel. That's what perhaps holds most people back. Like, okay, it's not like my life is a big secret, but neither do I want it to be on display for all to see. That's not a problem with you, eh? For you, you're comfortable.
No, I think some people would actually think I'm quite private, eh? I
Oh.
share what I want to share when I want to share it. Yeah. Okay, the truth is, my very close friends, I just yap. They know everything that's popping, you know. But then I do know which audience. There are some people who know very little about me. And it's because I sort of like, see, is this a safe person? Is this someone who's just hearing your story to go chat about you? But I do think that there's a beauty in being vulnerable, because when I share my experience of how I dealt with something, you don't know who you're going to help.
Yeah.
So, for example, sharing about losing my dad, literally sharing the whole experience of finding out, being in disbelief and everything. And I was a big daddy's girl. I think it would help someone who's lost a parent or a close friend or whatever, a sibling. You know, so that. Also, sharing, there was a year 2021 was a very, very tough year for me. And being able to share that and share how I moved with God that year, for me, it's a testimony, number one. Number two, and helping someone who could also maybe in future go through the same thing and know how to grapple with it. So I think it's necessary, but also one must be careful. Not bad. So you never know who's wanting to use your story against you. So yeah.
Okay, no, that's great. That's I like how authentic you are, like I've told you, and it definitely comes out even in the way you handle your LinkedIn, your blog, your writing style. It's something that people should definitely emulate. There's a pressure that people can have to conform to being a certain way for to fill a certain role, which is why I said I like how you handle the LinkedIn. I feel that pressure as well. Like, can I really post this picture of me in this kind of place on LinkedIn? But of course, there is a time and a place for these things and a method that you seem to have mastered. So, whatever the case, we appreciate it. We appreciate your example, that's for sure. So, do you think you're a big reader?
I am.
You
I love
are?
reading, but I love writing more. I love writing more than I love reading, but I am a big reader, yeah.
Okay. Do you think there are some books that you could recommend to our audience that you feel could really impact them in a positive sense. It could be fiction or nonfiction, local or otherwise, but books that that you've read that you were impressed by the skill and all that.
Yeah. Yes, I'm glad you said books and not book. The first one.
We'll limit you to three. We'll limit you to three.
Cool. Three is fine. Three is perfect. The first book would be Purple Hibiscus by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. I think it's just a beautiful book and great. It's actually my favorite novel, honestly. If I could describe it for 5 minutes, so let me not do that. Go get that book. It's great. The second one would be We Need New Name by Novalet Blawayo. So she's a Zimbabwean author. And I think for a Zambian reader, for me, when I was reading it, there's so many things that felt familiar because it just felt like, okay, I know she's not in Zambia. I know she's in Zimbabwe, but it feels like in Zambia. Then two of the people, it felt like home, honestly. Third book I would recommend, I think mine. Honestly, I was going to give another one, but I think mine. I would definitely say read my book because, especially if you're a Zambian or you're not, I think it's a great insight into the experiences of a tribal hybrid, which I like to call myself. And it gives insight into this troublesome ideology that we all had, which is tribalism. But I also think it just celebrates Zambia, regardless. Like, I know a lot of people don't, like, people read my book and are like, no, I've never seen Zambia like that. But really, if you don't love our country, who's going to love it, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to love it, and we've got to love it enough to help it. In whatever industry we're in, we need to do something to contribute to our country. So, yeah, that would be my hint.
Okay,
good. I think like Ambasela.
Go ahead.
By Kopano Matwa.
Mm-hmm.
Coconut. You know, by Kopano Matwa. That's also a great read.
Okay. I like how you've got so many different genres in your recommendations. And I should mention that you're the only guest so far to be courageous enough to recommend their own book. Most guests are like, should I recommend my own book? No, it's okay. I'll just recommend
recommend your book.
So thank you so much. I love that energy. So I think this has been a wonderful conversation. Honestly, I feel like at least it's not that you are hiding, but at least this is just yet another conversation that your beloved LinkedIn and Instagram following can come and listen to and enjoy. Yes, I've really learned actually a lot about you, and I'm very grateful that you took the time to share this with us. So thank you so much, Mono. Any last words?
Thank you for inviting me into this podcast. You're such a great person, honestly. I also thoroughly enjoyed meeting up with you. You circled up at the beginning and I didn't get a chance to chime in. But yeah, you're such a great human being, a great conversation in it. And I really wish you the best of luck with this podcast. I'm sure you're going to do big things. Looking forward to your award when you get it. If you have 5 guests, put me on the list. And we can come and celebrate you.
Thank you so much. That's very encouraging. Trust me, you need the encouragement.
You're doing great. Keep going.
Thank you so much, Mono. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
And that's a wrap on this interesting conversation that I had with Mono. I really appreciate her for having joined us and expressed herself in a very authentic and easygoing manner. A manner that greatly emulates her writing style, both on LinkedIn and away from it. Mono's insights truly remind us that every story holds weight, and how we tell it matters in order for us to correctly represent our individuality and authenticity. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and Spotify. And if something Mono said resonated with you, let us know in the comments or leave a review. We've got even more amazing guests coming lined up, so stay tuned. Until next time, keep writing your story, because the future is written by you.